This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Welcome to Keeping the Faith. This is Don Nolan. I'm filling in for Steve this afternoon while Steve is on a business trip this weekend. We are a call-in show, and today we are privileged to have a guest who is celebrating an anniversary of some significance, Tammy Tunnell, the Executive Director of A Woman's Fund. Welcome to our program.
Well, thank you, Don.
The numbers to call if you are interested in talking with Tammy during the program are 333-9455 locally, or you can also call an 800 number, 1-800-222-9455. And our topic today with Tammy is shelter for abused women, and that covers a lot of territory here in town because, as I understand it, you're celebrating your 35th anniversary. Is that correct?
That is correct.
How did you get involved with the program?
Well, actually, I got involved in the domestic violence field, quite by accident. I sort of fell into a job up in northern Illinois, up in Streeter, Illinois, and that was 20 years ago, believe it or not. And at that time, Urbana was a model program, and everybody wanted to work here. So after a few years up there, I managed to score a job in Urbana, and I've been here ever since.
And as I understand it from a News Gazette story on your program today, headline of the News Gazette today, if anybody's interested in reading about it, this program has been well known across the country. In fact, were it not for a few details, it might have been the first. Is that correct?
Correct. We are, and that kind of goes back and forth. I like to think we were the first. And Illinois Coalition Against Domestic Violence does have us listed that way in their timeline, but the National Coalition doesn't, simply because we cannot pin down the exact date. It solely became a domestic violence shelter.
Mm-hmm. We also, I'm surprised we have a caller right away, so let's just turn right to it. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith. You have a question for Ms. Tunnell.
Yes, I wondered if you had any arrangement for the pets or companion animals of people who are being abused if they need to flee their current living situation.
Yes, I'm glad you asked that. We actually do. We have a program called a Pets Place, which is in conjunction with the U of I Vet Med School. And what we do is we call it Foster Fur Parents. Mm-hmm. And what we do is we have the animals foster parented, basically, for about 30 days normally with someone else who will take care of that pet and also allow the person who owns the pet to come and visit and bring food and, you know, anything that you normally would do with your pet. So we've had that for a few years now. We were one of the first programs to do such a thing because we realized early on that people weren't leaving their homes because their pets weren't safe either.
That's wonderful. I'm a psychologist with the ASPCA, and this is a very big issue. That's really wonderful to hear. So the place to contact, if you just want further information about that program, is who would you contact about that?
Actually, you would contact A Woman's Place at 384-4390 is our hotline that's answered 24 hours a day, and they can connect you to the proper person.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for your call. You also have a web address, I believe.
Correct. That is www.awomansfund.org.
Well, we got to get this out fairly early in the program, but let's just go back to where we started. As I indicated earlier, this is the 35th anniversary, and as I understand it, you have a celebration going on as we are talking now.
Correct.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, today starts Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and to start off the month, we decided to do what we call an evening to remember, which is going to be a wine tasting and chocolate tasting. We have wines from Corkscrew and chocolates from Moonstruck Chocolates, along with a candlelight vigil when it gets dark, and a poetry reading. And usually people do their candlelight vigils at the end of the month, but we decided that it was too important to wait to the end of the month and decided to put it first.
Tell us a little bit about the history of a woman's fund and the organization services. It's got quite a history, up and down with funding,
right.
But nonetheless had quite an impact on hundreds and hundreds of lives of women and children. Back in 1971, I understand, was the origin of the program?
Right. And that was just a group of women who were concerned about where women were going to go when they had a crisis, which is how it got started. And it was strictly volunteer. Back then, one, there were no grants for this type of situation. I don't think domestic violence or the word spousal abuse or any of that was even coined. We didn't know really. We knew what it was, but we didn't have a definition for it. And these were women who said, hey, we've got to do something about, you know, women who need help.
Mm-hmm.
So that the fact that they did that and pulled it off and we're still here 35 years later is just amazing.
Mm-hmm. How did it get to be such a celebrated program around the country? Apparently it's nationally recognized.
Yes. Well, we were part of the first group of people who got together to start the Illinois Coalition Against Domestic Violence. Mm-hmm. And once your state has a coalition, and Illinois is actually known across the nation as one of the states who has good laws, good services, that sort of thing, along with Minnesota, Pennsylvania, Texas. So we've enjoyed a good reputation all those years simply because Illinois is a front runner in some ways.
Mm-hmm. Can you go back a little bit in your own biography? What is it that makes this a career for you? What is it that has drawn you into this?
Well, if you would have told me 20 years ago I'd still be here today, I probably would have laughed at you. I actually got involved. I saw an ad, and I answered the ad because they wanted a certified paralegal, which is what I was at the time. And I had a friend who just went through a situation with domestic violence where her husband came home, decided he was going to kill her, and chased her and their six-month-old into the bedroom where she was able to barricade herself in. And managed to call the police and her dad. And the sad thing is, her father, who was twice as far away from her as the police department, got there first.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was called third as her best friend, and I got on the scene,
As a paramedic?
I'm sorry?
Or as a friend, I'm sorry.
Yeah, as a friend, yeah. So I was, because I was her best friend, called, and I got on the scene with them. She luckily was not hurt, nor was her baby. Her father arrived first, her dad second, I was third. I got there and didn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the police, they arrested him. They did what they should have done. But we're talking, this was over 20 years ago now. So,
back in those days, frequently the police would just simply say to the abuser, behave yourself and walk away.
Yeah, or take a walk around the block. You know, hey, why don't you leave and go with your dad? And, you know, he can cool off. And we had it backwards. And luckily, in this case, they did the right thing. He was taken away. It was a pretty severe incident. And but I got involved back in the days when we went out and rescued people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, thank God we don't have to do that today.
What are the statistics around the country? I've got a couple here that I found startling. 95% of the victims of domestic violence are women. Every 9 seconds in the U.S., a woman is assaulted and beaten.
Right. Yeah, and that's over the years. It used to be, I think when I first got in the business, it was every 15 seconds. And as we've become more sophisticated and more well-known, we're learning that, you know, there's more violence out there than I think we're aware of.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, those are statistics that are pretty common.
What would count as success in dealing with these programs? This is an after-the-fact program. You have preventive procedures as well, educational programs, or at least you would hope to if you had more funding.
Right. We do have some of that in place. Unfortunately, we don't have near enough prevention in place. This is where I think we're missing the boat. But we do, yeah, we're an intervention program. So we're after the fact. And, prevention, I think, is where it should be. And we just don't do enough of it. Money isn't there for prevention, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
But what we call a success is self-defined by the people that come for services.
Mm-hmm.
So if I get a woman who comes in and says, you know, I just want to go to counseling, I want him to go to an abuser treatment program, and I want to get our family back together,
mm-hmm.
if that succeeds for her, then that's her success, and that's what we would deem a success. So we don't say, you know, getting somebody out of the situation is a success. We don't make people get divorced. That is an option for people. If somebody says, I don't want to be in this relationship, I want to live violence-free, and they get out of it, then that's a success. So we never define what success looks like for people.
How many beds and how many rooms do you have?
We have 10 bedrooms, and that has 32 beds and 4 cribs. So capacity is 36, although we often go 40 or more, simply because we have extra space with couches and cots and different things.
Are you full?
Yeah, pretty much. We have been full the entire last 12, 14 months.
And you've had to turn away people?
At some points, yeah. When we get too full, when our couches are all full, we do have to turn people away.
Mm-hmm. In the newspaper article, there was a discussion at the end about what you would want to have happen if you could wave a wand. what else do you need?
Well, there needs to be permanent housing for the folks who do want to get out of the situation and not go back into an abusive situation. So we need that. There's not a lot of affordable. It has to be affordable permanent housing. You know, more education. I always say, you know, the education and prevention piece has got to be better than it is. Mm-hmm. We need more children's programming. Mm-hmm. I believe I said in the article, it just kills me. I've been in the business long enough now to have seen children come through my shelter with their mothers, and now they're coming back either as victims or they're in the court system as abusers. And you look at them and go, oh, my God, you never got out of the cycle. And we're just recycling. You know, now they're going to live it as adults. Right. Their children will probably live it. So we're just creating the, you know, future generations.
Is publicity helping at all? Have you been able to track that at all, awareness around the country? Clearly, it's on people's tongues, as you also said in the article. There was a quote many years ago where someone said, do people still beat their wives?
Right.
But apparently that's not the case today. Has that awareness helped?
Yeah, the awareness helps, and I think that's how we've determined there's actually more violence out there than we originally thought there was. As we became more sophisticated in this movement and these services, mm-hmm. it became clear that we were just touching the tip of the iceberg.
Tell me a little bit more about that, and why don't we just start with the question, what really is abuse? Is it just physical?
No, abuse can be verbal, mental, and physical. And a lot of people that we see haven't been hit all the time. You know, that's very common. I think a lot of people who end up in our shelter have been in a severe physical violent situation. But most of the people we serve do not stay with us. They come in for services such as orders of protection, counseling, maybe children's services, medical advocacy. And sometimes they're not hit yet. They haven't reached that level. And if we can get to somebody then mm-hmm. and really kind of get them looking at, you know, can this violence be stopped? How do I change the patterns? How do I get out? Whatever they're thinking, then it's easier. I think the longer you're in, mm-hmm. the harder it is to get out of the pattern.
There's a story recently of someone who broke into a woman's center and assaulted. I think, wasn't there actually a death involved?
Right.
What are the protections that women have?
Well, we do have orders of protection out there for people who come in and, you know, it's court order. Unfortunately, it is a piece of paper, and if somebody truly wants to come and get you, you know, you can't hold up your paper and go, oh, you're bulletproof. I wish. That'd be nice. Our shelter, for example, does have safety measures. We have, you know, everything's locked. We have security cameras, alarm system. The police know our building inside and out, as does the fire department. So all of the officials, they're there. You know, we call and they are there in a matter of seconds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it never ceases to amaze me. Our fire alarm goes off and there's the fire department. and that's really comforting to know that we have officials in this area who really are, oh, my God, a woman's fund. Let's go.
It's not widespread. A lot of communities don't have this option.
Right.
Are there efforts to spread this kind of service, or is it just not possible with lack of funding?
Well, within the coalition, with the Illinois Coalition Against Domestic Violence, which is actually housed in Springfield, since it's the state capital, mm-hmm. there was a movement for a while to really try to get a shelter in each county, so mm-hmm. would be 102 that we would need. And when state funding and federal funding started to tighten up and start to go away, that had to be shelved.
Mm-hmm.
So unfortunately, we have counties in southern Illinois that are taking 9 and 10 counties for one shelter, and that's just ridiculous.
We have a caller on line 4. Yes, do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I know this is a serious topic, and I guess the thought that comes to mind, and I'd like to ask your guest, what are maybe the 2 or 3 or 4 most widely held myths or misunderstandings the public has about domestic violence?
Well, gosh, there's so many of them. I don't know where to start.
In your mind, what maybe in the greatest misunderstandings in your mind?
Well, one of them is that it can't be that bad or she wouldn't stay. And that's just not, that's not true. What people want is the violence to stop. They don't necessarily want their marriage to end or the relationship to end. And you have to realize that if you know what it's like to try to get out of a, what we would call a normal relationship and how hard that is, an abusive relationship is 10 times harder to leave. There's much more investment in the sense that this person may have isolated you, beaten you down so much your self-esteem is non-existent, and people do not have resources. So it's very hard to get out of something when there's no place to turn. So that would be number one. I think another one is that women ask for it, provoke it, you know, deserve it. Nobody deserves to get hit, and nobody wants to be hit. Nobody wants to be humiliated and demeaned. And, you know, all they, again, they want it to stop. And, you know, if this person, you know, I can make this person stop, I think is another one. I can change this person. I don't know how many times I've heard it where we have one person come through, and unfortunately, the abuser just keeps going on to the next person. And then I find somebody else who's got the same abuser. And it's like, but I can change him because I'm better. Not true. You're not going to change somebody because you love them enough.
Could I ask another question, please?
Sure. Go right ahead.
Often one hears or observes a kind of conspiracy of silence, wall of silence. You know, it's I don't want to get involved. Maybe sometimes it's if I get involved, it won't hurt. I truly believe one should get involved and report. What would you have to say to that particular phenomena?
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. It's just, and you know, when you do the right thing, sometimes it comes back to bite you. What do they say? You know, good intentions. You know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
No good deed goes unpunished.
Right, exactly. And I think that's true. And, you know, having watched that in my own life, you stand up and you do the right thing, and then it comes back to get you because nobody wants to get involved. It's, you know, it's a family matter. We can't be involved in that. It's not true. You know, I came from a time when I mentioned earlier we rescued people. I still do crazy things. If I'm driving down the street and see something happening, not only am I on the phone to 911, I've been known to pull up and say, hey, jump in my car. Okay, not safe. Not the smartest thing to do. But somebody has to stop it. And if people, you know, call 911, you don't necessarily have to get involved, and I do not recommend putting yourself in danger.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right.
But call the police. That's what they're trained to do. They'll come out and deal with it. If you see somebody dragging a woman out of a bar for, you know, gosh, please pick up the phone and call and do something about that. Run back in the bar and get the bouncer, you know, something to that effect. But too many people will just stand by and watch it happen and not do anything, and that scares me to death.
Thank you very much for your answer.
Thank you.
Thank you for your question. If you would like to call in with a question for our guest, Tammy Tunnell, the Executive Director of A Woman's Fund, you can call in locally at 333-9455, or you can call an 800 number, 1-800-222-9455. Why don't we talk a little bit I want to explore this this topic of myths later. There are apparently a number of them that I found intriguing. But before we get to that, why don't we talk a little bit about the men who do the battering? What are the characteristics of men? I'm sure you keep some statistics on this.
Yeah, usually the biggest one is low self-esteem. And we used to think that was just our, you know, our victims, excuse me, had low self-esteem. But we're finding that our men, you know, it's the power and control. I have to control somebody, so it might as well be my wife and kids or my girlfriend and her kids, whoever it happens to be. And I think that's the big one. Sometimes there's other issues. You know, alcoholism can play a part, but alcohol doesn't cause battering. It's two separate issues. And I think we all say, oh, well, you know, he wouldn't do it if he wasn't drunk. Mm-hmm. I know lots of people that are alcoholics that don't go around beating people. Yeah.
That's one of the myths, isn't it?
Right, yeah. Right.
We have a caller on line one. Yes, your question?
Yes. My question is, does the pace of life increase the amount of violence? And I'll hang on and listen to your answer off of here.
Thank you for your call.
Yeah, I think as we, you know, we look at that and we always look at, in the summertime, for example, our population rises, you know, huge. We have a huge spike. And we used to think, okay, it's the weather. You know, people are, it's summer, it's July 4th, everybody's drinking, we're partying. And what we found that wasn't true. In fact, what it is that women will tend to leave when it's easier to leave. The kids are out of school in the summer. The kids are out for the holidays. Holidays, another time we spike. And we always thought it was that violence during the holidays. And the problem, I think, is that as society says it's okay still to hit people, and that's how we react. If we teach our children that it's okay to hit, which is what they learn in a domestic violence home, then that's what they're going to do to deal with their problems. So part of it, I think, society is playing a part of, and the other is just that we're confused, which is why people are going to shelters.
We have another caller. You're on line two. Yes, your question.
Hello.
Hello.
I was interested in the fact that it's my understanding that much of the violence involves alcohol. Is that true?
There is a large co-occurrence between alcoholism and domestic violence, and it's not always just the abuser having a substance abuse problem, but a lot of times the women will self-medicate, so you'll see a lot of cross-alcoholism going on. And there is a huge correlation, but again, one doesn't cause the other. But we are just now, again, as we become more sophisticated, we actually are working in conjunction with Prairie Center here in Urbana to deal with those kind of situations. Deal with both of them, the alcoholism and the domestic violence. And they actually have an abuser program at Prairie Center to deal with both of the problems at the same time. And that's a huge step. And I'm proud that we're part of it.
Well, I know of a case where that was definitely the cause. And when the man finally quit drinking, he was a totally different person.
Right. Your inhibitions are lowered when you drink. So if you have the tendency to hit somebody, and once you get drunk, usually there's no, that filter is gone, that your ability to stop yourself is gone. And so it's real easy to see that come out when somebody has been drinking.
It leads me to another question. Since we know that alcohol is one of the factors in abuse, why would you sponsor an alcoholic occasion?
That's a good question. That is something we thought long and hard about. It's something that, because we have huge support from Corkscrew, and we in turn like to support them, that's why it's a wine tasting and not a let's go get drunk and party. So, we're very careful with that. But I appreciate you bringing that up. We had long conversations, and we know that can be, an issue. So we did decide, let's just taste it. We're not going to be sitting around getting drunk. And if you truly do a wine tasting, you know that you taste it and you spit it back out. So we're really keeping an eye on that tonight. And you know what? I could be wrong here. This could not be the thing to do. So I appreciate you bringing that up, though.
Uh-huh. Well, it would seem to me that it wouldn't be the... In fact, I feel that some organizations that are, medically related, and then they have occasions when they are serving and making available, with no charge, alcohol. And I think alcoholism is a very serious problem in our society today, and it disturbs me.
Right. And I think the part of the problem is that I've researched across the state what other programs do, is that funding is just so tight that we are turning to things we probably wouldn't have done 35 years ago to get funding that is greatly needed. So it's trying to achieve the correct balance between all of the issues and what's needed. But I do appreciate you bringing that up.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your call. Let's just pursue that a little bit further. Isn't violence a learned behavior? Not all alcoholics or people who use or abuse alcohol necessarily resort to physical violence.
Right, right. Violence is a learned behavior. Most of the time we learn it at home. Or, if you've watched TV over the past 20 years and how it's changed, or I think back to when I was a kid, you didn't see things on TV that you see today. You didn't see violence in the movies like you see it today. So I think as society has become more desensitized to it, that it's just more acceptable. And so I think that's our newest challenge, is fighting the acceptance of violence. And it's sad because I catch myself doing it, watching something on TV that's very violent. Something's being blown up. Somebody's being, run over. And it's like, oh. And it's like, wait a minute. Turn that off. So in my house, we don't watch too much TV for that very fact, because it's trying to keep it to, it's not okay.
When a child asks you why why is he violent, or why was he violent, or why is there violence? How do you counsel a child?
Usually we try to tell them, first of all, that, you know, one, it's okay to talk about it, because a lot of our kids are told, do not tell anybody about this. You can't go to school and talk about it. You can't tell the neighbors. And children are so honest. You got to appreciate it. As you're talking to a child who's maybe four, their honesty is just so out there and so open. Mm-hmm. And I wonder when does that stop? When do we make that not happen for our children anymore? But we usually tell them, first of all, it's okay to talk about it. Second of all, that it's not their fault. Many of our kids think that they did something to cause it. And usually their question is not so much, why did he do this? It's like, what did I do to make my dad hit my mom? Or what did I do to make my dad, hit me? Mm-hmm. And you have to explain, you didn't do anything. And that sometimes, adults do things that they shouldn't do, such as they take anger out, or it's not even really anger. Again, it's power and control. And you have to try to explain it, and it depends on the age of the child. A four-year-old's not going to understand, it's power and control. Whereas a teenager is more likely to understand that. So we have to gear everything towards age, what's appropriate. So a lot of what we do with our younger children is talk about what is cooperative play, how do you share. How do you use, not only we talk about inside voice, but how do you express your feelings? Because our children are often taught that they're not to express any of those feelings. They can't express their anger, their sadness. And we also teach them how to be safe. What's a safety plan? If you're not going to be staying with us and you're going to go home, how can you be safe when you get home? So sometimes we don't try to explain the behavior necessarily, as in to what can we do to help you deal with that behavior, because as a child they don't have a choice. Mm-hmm. They can't walk out the door and say I'm never coming back. Mm-hmm. They're stuck until they're at least old enough to get out of the house. Mm-hmm. So
I guess I was pushing a little bit further. What do you have some sense of, or do you talk about the deeper root causes of violence that you see immediately?
Yeah, well, I mean, we know that violence is linked to oppression. So if you step back and look at, what's oppressing, who are we working with, what racial, ethnic, cultural, all of that is related. So we have to step back and look at all of that as we deal with, the violence. So we do some talk about that. It's very hard, though. People are really kind of focused on the here and now and how can I deal with it, that you don't always have time to get into the root cause or our counselors are really good, though, about talking with people as to, as women start to realize that this is maybe not their first abusive relationship. Why are they getting into them? How are they getting into them? What's happening? What can they do differently? But so much is focused on here and now, and how do I just deal with the future and the present?
Mm-hmm. I was startled to read, and I really don't know what I'm talking about here, but I heard that there's something like 15,000 murders on average or more in the United States. And those, when you look at the percentages per capita, they're significantly higher here than in other countries. And
right.
That's deeply perplexing. Well, let's talk a little bit about the woman who comes to you, some of the characteristics. What is it that, are there any generalizations you can make about battered women at all?
Well, not really. I think the only thing is we used to say in this field that if somebody didn't come to you depressed, that, we had it. Oh, my gosh. Of course you're going to be depressed. We don't say things like that anymore. That was back in the beginning. But I think, what they're coming to is we are a last resort for people needing shelter. If your family is tired of dealing with you, mm-hmm. and that happens, unfortunately, families don't understand any more than the next door neighbor understands domestic violence unless they've somehow been involved. We actually have a pamphlet that's called For Family and Friends, How to Deal with Domestic Violence. So if your family's not supportive and you have your support system is pretty much null and void simply because maybe he's run off your family, your friends. Sometimes, maybe you still have your support through your church, which is wonderful if you do, because that's a great support system. But a lot of times the people we see, their support system is pretty much gone. And they have to start and build a new one. Mm-hmm. So they come to us, and we try to start helping them rebuild.
Do you deal a lot with learned submissiveness?
Yeah, I think, you know, as we get more sophisticated, that was something in the beginning that we talked a lot about. It's a defense mechanism. Mm-hmm. If I know if you're going to be angry at me because supper's 5 minutes late, and I've heard the most ludicrous reasons for people getting a beating, you're going to learn, okay, I'll be quiet, I'll just do what you want, and, you know, I will acquiesce to anything simply because it keeps me safe. And especially if I have children, you know, I've got to keep those children safe too.
And what do you say to people who say, well, if women go back, then what's the problem?
Well, they go back because there's no resources and they don't have, again, their support system is not there. And you can't stay at a shelter forever. And frankly, I liken a shelter to a dorm. If you went to college and lived with roommates, you're living with people you don't know, people you may not even like. And you're having, you know, it's a communal living. If you've been used to being on your own in your own home, you know, you've got rules to live by and things you have to do to, you know, keep us happy. So it's very hard. I don't know if I could live in a shelter personally, and I work in one every day. But they're going to go back because it's familiar and sometimes fear of the unknown. At least I know what I'm walking back into. I don't know what's out there if I try to support myself and my six kids.
Aren't there conflicting emotions sometimes, love and hate?
Yeah, a lot of people, you know, again, they want the violence to stop. And a lot of times promises get made. If you'll just come back, I'll go to counseling, or we'll go to counseling together, which we never recommend couples counseling because it does not work. She cannot be honest with a counselor when he's sitting right next to her. Mm-hmm. Because if she says something he doesn't like, guess what's going to happen when they leave?
When you're dealing with a known abuser.
Right.
Let's just take a breather here for a minute. I just wanted to point out to you that support for Keeping the Faith is provided in part by the University YMCA, engaging students and others in social action and community service for the past 133 years. At the Y this week, you might be interested in knowing there is a Know Your University Noon Free Lecture by Professor Jim Westcoat. His topic is civic engagement. The Friday Forum this week will feature the director of the Ecological Construction Lab, Katrin Klingenberg. The title of her lecture is Ecological Design as the Essence of Sustainability. And that will be this noon, Friday, October 6th, at the Y at 1001 South Wright Street in Champaign. Steve Shoemaker, the usual guest on this program, is the director of the Y. Once again, our guest this afternoon is Ms. Tammy Tunnell, executive director of A Woman's Fund, and we're talking about the Shelter for Abused Women program and related programs here in Champaign-Urbana. If you'd like to call in to ask a question of Ms. Tunnell, locally you can call 333-9455, or the 800 number is 1-800-222-9455. Well, let's talk a little bit about difficulties that have faced the program over the years and how you've gotten to where you are. I gather that there has been resistance to the program from some members in the religious community and perhaps other places as well. The primary problem, of course, is, as was indicated in the newspaper article, the News Gazette this morning, is predictability and stability and funding. But are there other forms of resistance?
Yeah, I think one thing is, you know, because we were founded out of a feminist organization, is the issue of pro-choice. And I think that that's a big one. And we deal with that all the time. And unfortunately, you know, I think when people ask me, just because I'm pro-choice doesn't mean I'd go off and have an abortion myself. I believe it's everybody's right. And that's the philosophy of our organization. And that's something we ask people when we interview, you know, can you support that position? It doesn't mean you have to believe it or you would do it. So we're very careful with that. And we never force, you know, anything on anyone. If someone shows up and they're pregnant, we never, oh, you should go get an abortion. Yeah, that's an option. But most of the time, that's at the bottom of a list. That's not the first thing that comes out of our mouth. It's like, hey, have you thought about an abortion? No. It's like, okay, what do you want to see happen? How, you know, where are you at? What, you know, where can we send you for support? Maybe it's, you know, birthright. You know, and we don't know. It's talking to that person and figuring out what they need. The other thing is, there was always this talk, and it's not so much these days, but it used to be that we were advocating divorce. You know, that we got our clutches on, you know, in this woman, and we said to her, you should divorce him. again, no, it's not something, you know, it's got to be what she wants. She may want a divorce. That's okay. But that's not the first thing, again, that we say. It's like, okay, you're in this relationship. What do you want to see happen? Mm-hmm. Most of the time they look you in the eye and say, I want the violence to stop. You know, very few people come in the door and say to me, I want a divorce right now. Yeah, that's a hard thing. So I think those are two big things that, you know, again, divorce, not so much these days. I think the pro-choice stance is still an issue. Mm-hmm. And I'm, you know, again, that's just that we were founded on that and we will continue with that philosophy. Again, though, personally, you know, we don't ever ask anybody that we hire or come in, hey, what do you think about abortion? Doesn't matter what, you know, they,
no,
you know.
No litmus test.
Right. And then funding is just the huge issue.
Mm-hmm. Do you work with the clergy a lot?
We don't work as much as I'd like to. We have a lot of support from different churches in the area, like the First Presbyterian Church of Champaign, First Presbyterian Church of Urbana, Unitarian Universalist Church. Mm-hmm. And I apologize if I'm going to leave any of them out. We've actually been doing some work recently with Vineyard. So we're trying to really spread out because, again, the support system people have with their church is huge. And we need to tap into that better. And there's so many churches in this area. I just keep thinking, you know, this is a perfect opportunity, you know, to do this. And I've met the churches. There is a church in Rantoul that has done some work with us. Again, sometimes it's just coming over, seeing the program, meeting mm-hmm. with us and talking because we really aren't as terrible as people think we are.
Mm-hmm. Maybe expanding in that direction would be a good direction for the future.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, let's just go ahead and take a look at some of these. As a guest earlier in the program asked, what are the myths? Well, I've got a little list here of myths or standard responses that I'm sure you've encountered before. Someone walks up to you and says, well, good wives and nice girls don't get battered. How do you respond?
Well, you know, after I laugh, no. it's just... No, you know, I like I said, I've heard the most ludicrous reasons why people get beaten. I worked with a woman, this was years and years ago now, who came into the shelter and she looked at me and she said, well, I had a spoiled green pepper in the refrigerator and my husband hates to see food go to waste. And I'm just like, you know, and we're taught not to react and not to look shocked. And I couldn't do it. I was just, my mouth fell open and I was like, what? Of course that's not the reason. But, you know, it's real easy to convince people, you know, hey, I only beat you because, you know, you spoiled the food. You know, food costs a lot of money. And so, no, you know, and, mm-hmm. and you know, if you really believe that, I'm going to keep my daughter far away from you. No.
Uh-huh. So. Here's another one. Batterers abuse their partners because they love them.
Yeah, that's great. Domestic violence doesn't make any sense. And I spent many years trying to make sense out of it. And because you would think, if I say to you, I'm going to leave you, your response should be, you're going to bring me candy and flowers and beg me to stay, not beat the, you know.
Bloody pulp.
Yes, thank you. I was trying to think of a word that wasn't going to get me in trouble. Yeah, so, you know, and that's what happens. I'm going to leave you when I get beat up. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't make any sense. And, you know, you can't make sense of it. Again, it's the power and control. I have to have power and control over something in my life. Maybe, you know, I don't like my job, but do I beat up my boss? Probably not. Mm-hmm. The guys that do that or the abusers, and I shouldn't say, I should clarify that there are some women out there that are abusive because I usually do get that question. I'm surprised I haven't. But those who abuse others, you know, if they're beating up the boss or say they get in the bar fight, that's somebody you want to stay away from. You know, because the tendencies for them to be violent with their partner are huge.
Well, with a figure like, and I assume this is correct, 95% of victims of domestic violence are women. That's Department of Justice
right.
figures. It's not a particularly viable move to say, well, sometimes women do
right.
it too.
Right. And they say that of that 5%, that 3% is male-on-male violence with gay bashing or gay, you know, partners or... so only really 2% of those would be people that would be women listed as being the abusive party to men.
Right. Well, Tommy, if you haven't heard these before, domestic abuse is confined to the poor, disadvantaged, uneducated, particular age or ethnic groups.
Oh, yeah.
That's
very false. I think what happens when you run a shelter is that the people that come to you for services, again, is a last resort. And they may be people that seem that they don't have a lot of money. They may be down and out on their luck. But... like I said, most of the people we serve aren't staying in our shelter. Mm-hmm. And I used to be shocked. People would come through and we used to have to ask for income. And I'd say, how much money do you make? And these people would be rattling off these huge incomes. I'd be like, I'm in the wrong business. You know, but yet here she's needing my help.
Right.
And it was okay, but it really brought that fact home to me that there, no, it happens across every racial, socioeconomic, you know, there is no typical victim.
So class is not a variable
no.
at all?
That's
no. interesting. I'll pick that up later. We have a caller on line one. Yes, your question for Ms. Tennell.
Yes, I have an observation and a question. My observation is that healthy outlets help a lot. And my question is, what do you recommend, Tammy, as a healthy outlet?
Well, that's a good question. My counselors work, you know, a lot with our victims because our victims are angry. And, you know, it's not okay. And I used to work in the court system, and we used to say, I would say, you know, if I was a victim, I would be very angry. And it would come across if I was on the witness stand, and you might not, you know, you wouldn't want me to be your victim because I'm not going to sit up there and cry. I'm going to be upset, angry, and I'm going to want something to happen. And so... there's a lot of different ways people, it just depends. You know, we used to tell people to go out and throw dishes, you know, go to the yard sale, get some cheap dishes and throw them, or go and yell or punch the pillow, or, you know, get the, you know, those little clown punching bags for kids. Those can be fun. And we would say that to anybody, you know, whether it's the abuser or the person who's being abused, you know, anger has to be dealt with. And, you know, maybe some people can talk it out. That's great. But, you know, there are other outlets than punching your partner.
Here's another myth. Battered women provoke their own abuse and battering.
Yeah. Again, you know, boiling that green pepper, that's good provocation. Now, sometimes you will hear a story of the tension is building and it's so horrible. And it's really hard to describe to somebody who's not been in a situation where you know it's coming. And I'm always surprised when people will walk in and say, oh, I know, you know, I knew on this date what was going to happen simply because I know his pattern. And this is true. That person knows him best. And if she looks at me and says he's going to kill me, I have to believe that. Now, true, it's only 3-4% that usually end up in a homicide situation. But I don't know that she's not going to be one of those 3-4%. I can make you angry, or something I do can make you angry, but I can't make you hit me.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, you know, no matter how terrible, you know, if I called you a name or I did something, and again, sometimes that does happen when you're backed into a corner and you are feeling it coming. Sometimes it's just easier to get it over with.
Mm-hmm.
Because usually after that initial, you know, you've got the tension building after that initial battery or battering phase, which is not always physical. They're, you know, what they used to call the honeymoon phase. I think we call it something else now, reconciliation phase, where life is better. Life is back to what it should be.
There are stages, aren't there?
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about that, and we'll go on to some of these others?
Yeah, some of it is it used to, we used to think of it as a cycle, and that's still sort of out there, but now we're looking at more of kind of a roller coaster ride. If you think about riding roller coasters, how 1 minute you're up and everything's great, and then you're down, and then you're up, and we think that's probably a little better way of putting it than the cycle that goes around, but people still come in and describe this cyclical thing where, oh, it was really tense for 3 days and then it happened, and then for 5 days things were great.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is those phases you can skip. You don't have to have tension building. You can have battering and then, you know, reconciliation and then back to battering. You don't have to go through this. You don't have to cycle through it.
I was thinking about stages after denial. Mm-hmm. Do you encounter denial a lot on the part of women themselves?
Yeah.
Then what are the stages?
Well, basically there's a lot of minimization going on, because if you think about it, if I came in and sat down and told you how terrible it was, you'd probably think I was crazy. That's a defense mechanism, because if I have to admit how serious it really is, mm-hmm. then I've got to take some action. You know, we're really good about saying, you know, there's always a consequence, you know, to your action. So, you know, if I'm just letting this happen, and there's a lot of public backlash about you're letting it happen. You're staying, you know, you must like it. So it sounds crazy even to the person living it,
mm-hmm.
but it's also very hard when you're in a situation to be objective. You know, it's really easy for me to stand back and go, hey, you know, did that red flag, he's very jealous, red flag, yeah, he beat up his boss. And I can tell you all the red flags I saw. Doesn't mean you saw them being involved in the situation. So part of it is when you're so involved in it, you can't be objective. You come in and tell somebody about it. If you tell them how horrible it really is, they're probably going to think you're crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And she's probably already been told she's crazy. So, you know, so then I think what you see after that is you go through a lot of minimization, and then as you talk it out more, you start to come to the realization that, you know, okay, I'm accepting what it truly is. You know, and we sometimes start with denial. People will come in and say, I'm not abused because I've never been hit. And then you got to go back to the beginning. You've been hair been pulled? Have you been kicked, spit on? You know, all these things that we don't consider battery necessarily because it's not that bad. Have you been pinched?
I would imagine that requires, to do that kind of counseling requires some considerable training. Do your folks?
A lot of what we do is we have to train people. We have a 40-hour training program, then we do more on the job.
That's what I was asking about.
But we actually, all of my people who currently counsel have master level degrees. And that's wonderful. We don't pay the best. So to be able to get those kind of folks with that caliber. Mm-hmm. So we try to make it up by having them, you know, go through their clinical supervision, and we try to pay for that. We try to give, you know, perks for working there. We can't give you a lot of money, but I could probably get some supervision for you to help them get their levels of counseling up to where they want them to be. And I have three very serious counselors who, you know, like what they do, who do it well, and are really trying to make, you know, their level of certification be higher than it is.
Mm-hmm. Battered women like to be abused or battered?
Oh, yeah.
Is another myth?
Yeah. Again, nobody wants to be hit. And I read a study recently that said it takes about 18 months to get somebody to a place where you can start beating them physically. Now, I wish I would have brought it with me. And I thought about that. Well, if you go out on a date with somebody, it's your first date, and he hauls off and punches you, you're probably not likely to go out again. So a lot of this is very deliberate, you know, and the jealousy. The big thing I always tell people is extreme jealousy. That's a huge red flag. Run and run as fast as you can, because that person's going to be, you know, the constant surveillance of you, or the stalking, or, you know, where have you been, keeping tabs on you. The control is going to be huge with somebody that's that jealous.
I was going to mention that for someone who needs to name or identify those red flags, what are some of the other red flags that you are in an abusive relationship?
Well, a lot of it is, again, the controlling, you know, what, you know, telling you what to wear, where you can go, who you can go with, what to do, you know, checking. You know, I've had people say, yeah, I can go from work to home, and he checks the odometer, and I better be home within 20 minutes of my shift ending. I don't know, if you try to get across Champaign-Urbana, forget it. You know, and you know, we're not Chicago or someplace, but the traffic in this town, sometimes you're going to be late whether you want to or not. So some of that, and do they abuse pets? That's a huge red flag too. Mm-hmm. And I think we're getting finally to the point where we can see that. So when I hear about kids abusing pets, it's like, oh no, somebody better get that child help now. Mm-hmm. So those kind of things. Or, again, you know, so much of the control. And the isolation, that's a big one. You know, you're not going to, I don't like your family. They're just trouble. I don't like your friends. Keep them away.
And then there's a very subtle one sometimes is emotional blackmail.
Yeah. Or humiliation is a big one, and degradation. You know, you're just stupid.
How does someone who isn't good at recognizing that recognize it?
Well, they don't always. I mean, it's very hard, because they say when you hear good things and bad things, that you're more likely to believe the bad things. So for every bad thing you hear, you have to hear, I can't even remember what it is, 10 good things. Mm. So if I'm told every day how stupid and fat and ugly I am, I'm probably going to believe it. Mm-hmm. And not knowing, you know, my childhood background, what if I grew up in a home where I was told how fat, stupid, and ugly I was? Of course I'm going to believe that. And I'm not going to recognize it as abuse. It's just normal. Mm-hmm. So much, you know, is normalized for people that, and then they come in and talk to us and we're saying, no, you know, it's not okay to be called fat, stupid, and ugly. And sometimes that's hard for people to accept, but I've always been called that. You don't understand. Yeah, I do understand, but it's not okay.
Anger is often a defensive mm-hmm. mechanism, or feeling of frustration. And you mentioned low self-esteem.
Right.
That's sometimes hard to recognize as well.
Right.
When someone is acting that out.
Right.
Another myth that you've already really addressed is alcohol and drugs cause battering.
Right. No. They again, there's a lot of correlation, because it's real easy to self-medicate. Women are especially bad about that. You know, or a lot of times we find women will get involved with drug use because the abuser is using drugs, and he can't very much, you know, be using drugs without her using them, because then he loses control of her. Mm-hmm. So if I can get her to use with me, then the control is still intact, mm-hmm. Because she's probably not going to do anything. If she's going to be high with me, we're going to be together. It's not like she's going to be running off and doing something, right. Because I've got her with me.
And this list of myths I picked up off the net, but here's one I've encountered. Battering, this talk about battering really overstates the case. Few women are actually beaten.
A lot of times in the beginning, there isn't, like I said, you don't go out with somebody and they punch you on the first date and you marry them. A lot of it is the time spent with, you know, beating you down and with what they often say by the verbal abuse, the mental abuse, the emotional abuse, because I got to get you to a spot where it's okay to start hitting you. Because, like I said, the first time you hit somebody, you better have them in a place that you can keep them. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't, they're out the door.
All a battered woman has to do is call the police and deal with the situation.
Yeah, that would be great. No. You know, a lot of the people that we work with never call the police. Now, I'll have to say law enforcement is a huge referral source for us. It's probably our largest, and that's fabulous. But so many of the people that we see never call the police. They're scared of the police. They're scared that he's going to be arrested and lose his job. Some people don't even want to get orders of protection because he, again, might lose his job. But if that's the sole source of income, you know, she's got to weigh, you know, what is, if he gets mad and loses his job, you know, I'm really going to get it. Or if I'm planning on going back and he doesn't have a job. You know, there's so many factors that go into that. If it was just that simple that, you know, call the police and it's over, there isn't. There's then what if the state picks up charges? You've got to go and testify. What if he does get a, you know, what if he does lose his job? So there's so many things to consider that it's not an easy choice. Mm-hmm. Most people pick up the phone and call the police because they're in danger and they need immediate help. That's what they do. But then when it comes time to take it further, they step back and go, whoa. You know, I can't do this. And that's very frustrating for law enforcement and for the criminal justice system. It's frustrating for us because we want that to stop.
You mentioned when we were talking about some of the resistance that you've gotten to your programming. Mm-hmm. This myth is battering is a family matter, but there are other costs out there outside of families.
Right. I used to, I don't know if you... If you knew former police chief Don Carter from Champaign Police Department, and I used to love when he'd go out and talk because he always would say the violence on our street is because of the violence in our home. Hmm. And I would follow him. I'm like, yes, say, please talk. And he's absolutely right. If you look at some of the people, you know, that are out perpetrating the violence in the street, go back and look at their home life. Were they, you know, maybe they are a child of domestic violence, especially our teenage perpetrators. Go to the prisons and talk to people, you know, that are in there for violent crimes. 70-80% of them had bad childhoods because mm-hmm. of abuse or domestic violence. So the family violence piece is huge. And if we can, you know, we would probably be making our crime rate drop if we could figure out how to address family violence early on so that these people aren't perpetrating.
Have you reflected on that any? Every now and then I've heard people make pronouncements about, you know, parental counseling and certification and all that. So it's just not going to fly in a society like this.
Yeah, I always say I would love to write it. You know, I have all these great ideas about how to do write a grant, get a study and, you know, and talk to abusers and ask them, you know, how is it you got four women at the same time? You know, what's the secret? So I think we're missing, you know, we really should be talking to the people who are doing the violence who would probably give me a great insight, but I'm not sure they'd talk to me. Mm-hmm. But if I could pay them or this, you know, the family violence is what's causing our violence on the streets. You know, that's something we should be looking into. And there's nobody. You know, I one day they will. I believe one day, maybe when I'm gone, somebody will say, hey, she was right. Right. And I can't take credit for it. That really belongs to Don Carter.
One more. Battered women hate men. Battered women need to learn that not all men are bad.
That's kind of that was another big one, too. I mean, you know, we always heard we were the radical feminist lesbians. And I used to laugh and say, do our husbands realize this? Not true. You know, no, they don't hate men. What they do is they love these people that are beating them. They just want them to stop, and they want, you know, what I always hear them say, well, if the real Don would come out, you know, that's all I want. Well, unfortunately, you're living with the real Don, you know, and it's hard. But it's also true that people can change. And if I didn't believe that abusers could change, I couldn't still be in this business. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have programs in town, Family Life Skills, Change, Prairie Center's program, and they do good work and they are making a difference. Would I like to see more of a difference and faster? Yeah. But it takes time for people to change. It's not easy. So, but like I said, if I didn't believe that could happen, I couldn't be here today.
You also have taken on Rape Crisis Hotline some years ago.
Right.
You want to give that number out as well?
Yes. Okay. And I'm going to blow that one because I... 355-5203 is their local number. And again, for anybody who's been...
briefly about that program.
Yeah. And what they do is, this is a program if you've been sexually assaulted, and sometimes there is sexual assault within the context of domestic violence, so it gets a little sticky. Although both programs can work with one person. We certainly have, we have counselors who deal more with sexual assault and those who deal with domestic violence, and we try to keep them separate because there are a few different issues. A lot of it's the same. The thing with rape crisis is you really feel powerless, I think, especially if it was a stranger. Mm-hmm. Although most people are attacked by an acquaintance or, you know, a loved one. So this whole thing we teach kids about stranger danger, well, that's great, but really they're probably more likely to get sexually assaulted by someone they know. Mm-hmm. So, again, we try to work on those issues. But that, you know, you really have, when you've been sexually violated, your power is just, you want to talk about powerless. There you are. And you're trying to figure out, one, how to be safe, especially if it happened in your home. Or maybe it was out on the street, or maybe it was on the campus. So you're trying to figure out how to get back your life and your control of your life. And that's what they really spend time working. Also, they work with the court system. You don't have to go through a trial alone. We have people that can go with you and be there and advocate on your behalf.
Through this program?
Through Rape Crisis. And we also have the medical advocacy program where they respond to the hospital to a sexual assault victim. Mm-hmm. Because when you're traumatized like that, you don't know what your rights are. You don't know what you should or shouldn't do. You don't know what you can do or what you can't do.
You at least might not be thinking straight about it.
Right.
About
and here you have somebody who can be there and say, it's okay, you don't have to do this or you don't have to do that. You can refuse this. You know, we recommend that. So really the other person looking out for their best interest, because, you know, like I said, I have luckily never been sexually assaulted. I don't know what that trauma feels like, and I certainly never want to feel it.
Mm-hmm. How frequently do you get those calls?
It goes in waves. Sometimes we get three a day, and other times we'll go for, you know, a week and not have any, or a couple of days. You just don't know, and it really depends on that really is underreported. We know domestic violence is underreported. Sexual assault's far more underreported.
Even today?
Yes. Even today, as much as we've done education and awareness, yes, in Illinois, in Champaign County, it goes underreported simply because it is so shameful for people to have to admit they were a victim. It's become easier to say I'm a victim of domestic violence or I'm homeless, but to still look at somebody and say I'm a victim of sexual assault is hard.
Very briefly, you might want to talk a little bit about your upcoming events. We've got about 45 seconds.
Right.
What's happening here? You have a dinner coming up, as I understand it.
Right. We have on October 19th is our annual dinner, and we're having dinner theater, and that's going to be fun. And that's at the Historic Lincoln. We also have Ned Kelly's helping us with the fundraiser on October 7th, and Brat Pack is going to be performing, and that's going to be great fun. Celebrating Women Who Make Music, we have Angie Heaton, Kayla Brown, and G. Lee, who are going to be at the High Dive on October 15th to support a women's fund. And we also have a conference we're putting on October 19th and 20th, again at Historic Lincoln. And we have a Fresh Lipstick Fashion Show with Linda Scott.
Sounds like you're very busy. Well, thank you very much, Tammy, for joining us. My name is Don Nolan, and thank you for joining Keeping the Faith. Goodbye.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Every week, to the best of our knowledge, takes us all on a journey. We might follow a spiritualist searching for the way out of darkness. We might follow a physicist on the search for the beginning of the universe. We might follow a cook toward the perfect recipe. I'm Jim Fleming. It's the journey that's fun. On to the best of our knowledge, from PRI, Public Radio International.
tonight at 7 here on WILL Urbana. Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, mostly clear and warmer with a low in the mid-50s and south winds around 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, sunny with a high in the mid-80s and south winds 15 to 20 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low in the lower 60s and south winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Looking ahead to Tuesday, partly sunny with a high in the upper 80s and south winds 10 to 15 miles per hour.
WILL programming is funded in part by a grant from TK Service Center, 806 Perkins Road in Urbana, offering automotive repair on cars and trucks by ASE-certified technicians. In business since 1984, they perform computerized engine diagnostics, alignments, brake, suspension, preventative maintenance, and other repairs. A shuttle service for customers is also available, 344-0800 or on the web at tkservicecenter.com.
It's 6 p.m. This American Life is next.